We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or visit preborn.com.
The American Family Association, informing, equipping, and activating to transform American culture.
After the resurrection, when Jesus was given all authority in heaven and on earth, he commissions his disciples to make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything Jesus commanded them.
We at the American Family Association seek to aid the church in our great commission.
Jenna Ellis in the morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the morning.
Good morning and happy Friday. Today is December 6th. We are well underway into the Christmas season, and I hope you all are enjoying your merrymaking and your almond croissant coffee, if you are me. Yes, I am. But we're turning to the news, and police in New York are still searching for the suspect that shot and killed the UnitedHealthcare CEO. And this is just a completely tragic and wild story in so many respects. So here to break it all down and tell us the latest is Chris Woodward, who is a reporter and newscast coordinator for American Family News. So Chris, what do we know at this point?
Hello?
Yeah, we got you, Chris. Can you hear me?
Okay, yeah, I thought I lost you there for a second. I'm sorry. Yeah,
no worries.
So, as you mentioned here, the search still continues this morning.
And so what all do we know about what happened so far in terms of the investigation?
Yes. Okay. So for those that have not paid attention to this case, maybe missed a few of the details with some of the other stuff going on in the morning, the CEO was murdered in Manhattan on Wednesday morning. It was captured on video. A lot of people have probably seen video on Fox News, really any television outlet. It shows the CEO walking down the sidewalk there in Manhattan, and the gunman walks up behind him and shoots him, apparently multiple times. Now, in a story that we had yesterday on AFN.net, authorities found casings at the scene with words written on the casings. Those words were things like deny, and that led investigators to believe that maybe this was over some sort of insurance denial, being that this was a CEO of a major insurance company. Authorities are still looking for the suspect. They have found a video of him at a Starbucks. He was wearing a mask and a hood, so that kind of impacted authorities in their search for the suspect in terms of trying to identify him. They did find what they're calling a burner phone in an alley that had some fingerprints. They're looking at that and trying to determine whether or not there may be some DNA on that, as well as a water bottle from a nearby Starbucks, that Starbucks that he may have visited. Now, this morning on Fox News, they had a story claiming that the suspects may have traveled to New York City from Atlanta via a Greyhound bus. And one big story from last night was it was a story involving how there were images supposedly of the gunman, the suspected gunman, at a hotel, and he was not wearing a mask. There were two pictures. And in one of the pictures, he appears to be kind of smiling or smirking. And CNN, interestingly enough, reported that the clerk, the female clerk at the hotel, got him to remove his mask because, and I'm not making this up, the female clerk was flirting with him.
Wow. Well, you know, there's always a mistake. And as they say, there are no smart criminals because they eventually get caught. But so what do we know, Chris Woodward, if anything at this point about the motive?
Well, you know, a lot of people have been led to believe that it was over insurance denial, because this is an insurance chief executive officer. It's a major insurance company. The fact that he wrote words on the casings, that led investigators and Joe Sixpacks out there to believe that it was somebody mad about the insurance industry. There were also reports, suspicions that maybe it was a hit job, but as one of the lead investigators said last night in a press conference, he said, and I'm not making this up, he said a lot of people's knowledge about so-called hitmen come from TV shows and films. Now, I get what he is saying here, but I've worked in news for 22 years, and there are occasionally stories about people in murder-for-hire situations. So I wouldn't rule anything out in terms of trying to determine what the motive might have been here.
Yeah, and I think that that's still obviously they're still going to have to parse through a lot of the evidence here and hopefully apprehend the suspect and be able to clarify, you know, exactly what happened. And yet the response to this on social media and elsewhere has really been, I think, bizarre and also in some instances just frankly quite evil, because what we're hearing from a lot of people who are actually celebrating this cold-blooded murder just because of this gentleman's line of work. While there, of course, has always been a debate over the healthcare industry in the United States and, you know, single payer versus, you know, other types of options and how people are frustrated a lot of times with healthcare providers, that doesn't ever justify this type of vigilante justice. I mean, there was one report that I saw that there's an allegation that perhaps this CEO was using AI to help deny claims. And as you mentioned, Chris Woodward, the shell casing said delay, deny, depose, which, you know, seems to kind of indicate some kind of motive like that. But, you know, but this is all about America not applauding this kind of vigilante justice if that's what actually happened here. But it seems like a lot of people are rushing to that conclusion and then saying somehow that it's okay just because maybe they didn't particularly like this guy's line of work.
Yeah, there's been a lot of awful things on X, for example, where a lot of people go to share two cents. I know there was a story or multiple stories yesterday from a variety of news outlets about how Taylor Lorenz, the famous ex-journalist who likes to wear masks and still belittle people for not wearing a mask and getting a COVID shot, even today. She was kind of celebrating or saying, you know, well, you know, he's an insurance executive. A lot of people don't like what they have to do. I mean, he's still a father. He's still a husband. He's still somebody's son, a neighbor, friend, what have you. That's a really terrible thing to say, and certainly you wouldn't want anybody celebrating your demise. Just because it's an industry that you might have disagreements with doesn't mean that's something that you celebrate. And really, that it's a sad statement to show you where people are mentally today in the United States. It's an unfortunate thing, certainly a violation of the golden rule. I mean, I know there are a lot of people that don't like news types, and certainly we in broadcasting sometimes bring it on ourselves. But that's a terrible thing to say, even if it's you know, someone that you might disagree with. You wouldn't want anybody saying that about your family member or friend.
Right. Well, and we saw some similar reaction with the attempted assassination of President Trump as well, of, you know, some of these leftists that were saying, you know, oh, sad that the assassin missed, and, you know, other even more heinous comments. And, you know, this really gets, I think, to the heart of America becoming a culture of death and really not recognizing and affirming the inherent dignity of every human being made in the image of God. And this is why our founders had the recognition that, yes, the government does carry the sword, as Romans 13 says in Scripture, that, you know, and I believe in a very careful application of the morality of the death penalty. But this is why the founders said it has to be after due process, and it has to be in a legitimate judicial forum, you know, not these kinds of clearly criminal activity. So what does that say to you about the commentary overall on just where we're at as a culture?
Yeah, it's really a terrible situation that we're in, and I think one of the reasons why people are as vocal as they are and they say awful things is just because social media, while it is an amoral product, a lot of immoral things go on there. And unfortunately, people looking to make a name for themselves, maybe get some retweets or reposts, whatever we're calling it now, they will say and do awful things to get jokes or, kind of people applauding them. But you're right. I mean, the Trump shooting attempt back in July, there were a lot of people that were saying things like, if only he hadn't turned his head, or next time, don't miss. Terrible, terrible things. And these are, people's celebrities, for example. It's not unheard of for celebrities to have stalkers or maybe people make an attempt on their life because they're unhinged. And sometimes people carry out these dastardly plots to hurt or harm a celebrity. It's a terrible situation, and it's all the more reason why we as Christians really need to be consistent in how we act and talk about things. You could probably find, things on radio or things on social media that I shouldn't have said. So I'm not sitting here trying to say I'm a perfect person. We're all lost people in a dying world. But we do, as Christians, I think, need to make it a point to really pay attention to what we're saying about folks and be consistent in that, because we are supposed to be, we're called to be representatives of Jesus, and we should be like Jesus as much as possible from here until either we're called home or he comes home and gets us.
Amen to that, and really well said. Chris Woodward, he's a reporter and a newscast coordinator for American Family News, and you can go to AFN.net and also follow them on X for headlines from a biblical and Christian worldview. And I also write a column for American Family News generally every Friday, so my column will be posted a little later today. And Chris, to your point that this is so prolific, this type of disturbing content is prolific now, not just on the news, but also on social media. I was talking to a friend even earlier this morning, who was saying this is all over, her Instagram feed and her Facebook. And she's like, and this just is like really uncomfortable. And it reminded me that, kids have such easy access to social media. And if we're putting all of these news headlines and, some of these things out there, a lot of these videos, it didn't used to be that you could just get that over and over and over again in your news feed, especially for kids. How concerning is that, do you think?
Yeah, it's definitely something that gets their headlines. I mean, I have been surprised just through conversations at the dinner table of what, how politically up to speed my two daughters are. One's 15, one's 11. And it's surprising sometimes what they are aware of. And I'm just like, what? I'm trying to think, what did I talk about at the lunch table back in the day, which wasn't that long ago, despite what they may claim. But anyway, kids are really up to speed on things. They notice things. You can't get, a smart home. If you have a smart home device that comes with a screen, those things display news topics. If you have a smart television, a lot of stuff will come across that to try to get your attention. Kids do notice things. And one interesting situation here with the murder of this chief executive officer is that the murderer has been displayed on television for going on 2 days now. I am shocked, Jenna, that the shooting has been seen or played as much as it has been. A lot of times news outlets won't do something like that. They might play it once or twice and then say, due to the graphic nature of this, we're not going to play it again or something of that sort. This is nonstop. I mean, it's been on 2 days. You can't help but notice it. If you're at an airport, if you're in a restaurant, if you're in a hotel lobby, if you're watching television at home, you've no doubt seen this murder a couple of times now. And that is one of the reasons why I think people are kind of as hardened as they are, is because this stuff, it's become a normal type thing now, and we're just talking about it as if it's just another thing in the news cycle.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think we've become desensitized a lot as a culture to all of this evil that is just continually broadcast upon us because of how much we see in the media. And it's a good reminder that maybe especially for parents, you know, have your kids disconnect and, you know, not just sit in front of tablets all day. And even for us, I mean, there are times where I just have to take a break. I like my weekends to kind of, you know, just say, I'm not going to pay attention to all of the headlines out there. But Chris Woodward, really appreciate it. And last question, real quick, as we head into the break, how close do you think they are at actually catching this guy?
I think they are very close. They're closer than we think they are. I wouldn't be surprised if it's something maybe even this evening or the weekend.
All right. Well, maybe we'll carry that story here on Monday on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. But American Family News will have it up before then if it happens. Chris Woodward, really appreciate it. We'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. Could the fate of America's children be tied to the fate of our nation itself? Much like the abortionists who end the lives of the unborn, the left is determined to undermine the pro-life movement. First, they target the babies. Then they come for the rest of us. Preborn stands as a beacon of hope for the most defenseless among us, preborn babies. Every day, Preborn's network of clinics rescue, on average, over 200 babies while surrounding expectant mothers with God's love and offering a free ultrasound. Rescuing the miracle of life has never been more crucial as we navigate this time of moral decline in our nation. Will you join Preborn in protecting the least among us? For just $28, you can sponsor an ultrasound and give a mother the chance to choose life, not only for her baby, but for herself. An ultrasound doubles a baby's chance at life. To donate securely, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby. Or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com/AFR. Preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And, you know, it's a Friday, and even just reflecting on the news of just this week, I mean, we were talking about the reaction to the cold-blooded murder of this healthcare CEO, and then we've been talking about the arguments at the U.S. Supreme Court that are actually questioning whether transgenderism is an immutable characteristic, and as if the high court needs to even contemplate a case where anyone in America is actually affirming the gender mutilation of children. I mean, this is where we're at as a society, where we are actually having these discussions. And, you know, I remember back in like the 90s when I was a kid, you know, I mean, I'm an 80s, 90s kid. And, you know, and thinking, oh, wow, when we get, you know, beyond 2000, there was a show on, I think it was like the Nature and Science Channel, something like that. You know, we didn't have like the 4,000 channels that everybody does today. But and all of the older people know what I'm talking about. But there was this show called Beyond 2000. And it was like how all of this, you know, great tech and all this stuff is going to foist us into a great utopia, and everything is going to be so much better, and we're going to advance so much as a society. And here we are in 2024 asking the question about whether men should go into the women's restroom on Capitol Hill. I mean, this is just, it's so insane. So to talk more about the cultural decay, where we're at and where we should be going, is our good friend Aaron McIntyre, who's a producer for The Steve Dace Show and one of our favorite commentators here. So Aaron, your thoughts overall just on news of this week and kind of where we're at in 2024. I would not have thought we would be having these kinds of conversations today.
Hey, good morning, Jenna. Thanks for having me on. Good to talk to you as always. And yeah, the way you led this is how I was actually going to talk about this. I mean, it is a sorry and sad commentary about our country. Even as much optimism as I'm feeling in the aftermath of what happened a month ago today, or yesterday, I should say, this is a sad commentary about where we are in the country, that the nation's highest court, our nation's highest court, has to weigh in on whether children should be given life-altering, permanent, quote-unquote, surgery in the name of gender. That in and of itself, of course, is a sorry commentary stemming from, as you know, Senate Bill 1 in Tennessee, which banned, I like to call it meatball surgery and chemical castration for minors. The left has given it all sorts of euphemistic names like gender-affirming care and gender transition surgery. No, it's meatball surgery. It's chemical castration. It's permanent practices so that 2-, 4-, 6-year-olds can feel like they're, if they were born a boy, they can feel like a girl. Of course, it's all a lie from the pit of hell. And it's really mutilation is what we're talking about here. And this is what the Supreme Court is arguing this week. And like I said, it's a sorry commentary of where we are as a country. And there is something uniquely pernicious about this issue, Jenna, as I'm sure you're aware, uniquely pernicious, uniquely evil about this issue. Whereas things like homosexuality, it's a perversion of God's design. Transgenderism is a rejection of God's design. That is uniquely evil, in my opinion. And you see it worn out in some of the just sorry arguments that some of these lefties on the Supreme Court are making. You saw Ketanji Brown Jackson, whom you're aware also, during her confirmation hearing for the Supreme Court, she couldn't define what a woman was because she's not a quote-unquote biologist. She compared not giving testosterone to girls, to little girls. She compared that to banning interracial marriage. Not to be outdone, though, Sonia Sotomayor interrupted one of Tennessee's legal counsels on the case, arguing on behalf of that Tennessee law, saying, you know, how many more of these surgeries, how many more of these meatball surgeries do we need before we learn that there are irreversible damages to children? She interrupted that legal counsel and said, hey, hold your horses here. Every single medical procedure has side effects, even taking aspirin. She compared the permanent mutilation of children to taking aspirin. If that is not uniquely evil, I don't know what is. I pray the Supreme Court comes to the right decision here. Axios posted, or I don't know how they would know this, but the publication Axios, they reported earlier this week, it looks like the Supreme Court will likely uphold Tennessee's ban, which would be a good thing. I'll tell you, though, Jenna, I'm worried about Neil Gorsuch, his history on these such issues. Well, let's just call it checkered.
Yeah, and I agree with you that I'm very concerned about that, Aaron McIntyre, especially because Gorsuch did not say one word during the arguments. That was very odd to me because, you know, regardless on cases where, you know, he's gone all kinds of different ways, generally he always asks questions of both advocates, both sides. And the fact that he just stayed silent, I don't think that that's happened in any case that he sat on the bench, at least that I'm aware of. What did that potentially indicate to you?
Well, it's kind of what we just alluded to is this, and, you know, just off the top of my head, you know, in big cases like this, I'm not a legal beagle following every single Supreme Court case, but on big cases like this, I do tune in quite a bit. And in recent memory, I can't remember a single time where Gorsuch didn't at least ask some probing questions, some good questions as well, but to just sit there in silence over all of this, that either means that he's got his mind made up or something else. So I'm worried about Gorsuch just because of his record. I'm hoping that because we're talking about children here, not being able to truly consent, I'm hoping that kind of has made up his mind, but I am worried about that. I think also another tip of the cap, if this does go our direction, if this does go the righteous direction in banning this practice, and this practice should be banned across the board, this is just the beginning, is banning it for your youth. But I do pray that the Supreme Court makes the righteous decision to uphold this ban on this chemical castration and meatball surgery for children. You know, we got to give the tip of the cap to Matt Walsh and the Daily Wire, because this entire bill all stemmed from an investigation Matt Walsh did of Vanderbilt University Medical Center's practices of giving this type of meatball surgery to minors, and their very cavalier and ghoulish attitude towards doing so. I mean, regardless of how this shakes out, he needs a tip of the cap. But I hope, like I said, Gorsuch doesn't pucker here.
Yeah, I agree. And I was also very concerned, not just about Gorsuch, and of course, because he wrote the majority opinion in the Bostock decision, which inexplicably took the term sex in the 1964 Civil Rights Act and said, oh, yeah, sure, that includes sexual orientation and gender identity, you know, as if the Congress back in the 60s ever contemplated that. That was a wrong decision. But so not only that, but it also really bothered me. And I talked about this on air yesterday for listeners who were tuning in, that the Chief Justice and also Justice Barrett engaged in the language lie of the left by calling the ACLU advocate, who is a woman, calling her Mr. And then several of the conservative justices also use the term gender-affirming care, which we know that it's not. That's a lie from the left as well. And it seems like nobody from the conservative side, other than, you know, a couple of pointed questions by Alito, which were great, I think, kill shots to their argument, nobody wanted to just call out what a farce this is. I mean, I was ready for Justice Gorsuch maybe to say, okay, well, so what if my kid thinks that he's a pirate? Are you going to say that it's fine to cut off his hand and put a hook in that in his place or a leg, you know, for a peg leg? I mean, how far do we go here in affirming the confusion of a child? I mean, but nobody was willing to go there. It almost seemed like they had to give deference and some kind of respect to this lie from the pit of hell.
Yeah, whoever controls the language controls the argument. And the longer anybody who is to the right of Bernie Sanders, as long as they continue to kowtow and use the language of the left, they will lose to the left. Now, there are some gains being made on this issue, I see. The very fact, like I said, the very fact that we're arguing at this at the Supreme Court is a sorry commentary. Yet at the same time, if you win, that is a definite win. But ultimately, you have to reject the language of the left. I mean, this woman that you were talking about, the lady looks like a dude, the ACLU lawyer that you were just referencing, she was on CNN this week. She was on CNN this week talking about how kids knew when they were 2 years old that they were not the right, not in the right body. How do you not just reject that on its face? This is madness. It's cowardice not to call it madness. And as you were saying there, I was not aware of that when it came to the more conservative, quote-unquote, justices on the Supreme Court using the term gender-affirming care. But, boy, that's disappointing, and it doesn't make me any more optimistic.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, it is a sad commentary that conservatives, and I think you're right, anybody to the right of Bernie Sanders, I mean, and anybody who is just logical and who cares about children and not imposing permanent bodily harm. I mean, this is what we're talking about. You know, why are we at the point that we're at in the culture that we care more overall about not offending these lunatics like this ACLU lawyer who's standing there arguing in front of the court, like dressed as a man, pretending to be a man. I mean, it's laughable in its absurdity. And yet, if the justices would not have engaged that, they would have gotten the whole media, social media gamut of, you know, calling him bigoted and all kinds of, you know, names and stuff. Why do we care about that more in today's society than standing up for truth?
Yeah, I mean, I think you were the one who tweeted this earlier this week. We went from Obergefell to this case in fewer than 10 years. This is Romans 1 playing out in real life. They exchanged the truth for a lie. It's ultimately spiritual. And does cultural change take place, you know, bottom up or top down from government? And, you know, there's always been arguments, and I'm sure people a lot smarter than me can probably articulate why I'm wrong. But I think it's kind of both. It kind of goes both ways. If there's unjust and unrighteous laws, the culture will become more unjust and unrighteous. When the culture becomes more righteous and just, we will get more righteous and just laws. Ultimately, though, and I've always said this on your show, ultimately, though, it's a failure of the pulpit. It's a failure of the pulpit in the church in America that we even have to have these conversations. The men in the pulpit should be on the vanguard. We should have never gotten within 10 feet of this issue if pastors in America, and by extension their congregants, were bold and courageous in speaking the truth in love to their neighbors in their own communities. We're only going to be able to put an end to this madness when the people rise up and when the pastors rise up and say no more. It's only going to end when that happens and not a minute sooner.
I'm speaking with Aaron McIntyre, who's a producer for The Steve Dace Show, who stands up and speaks truth every day. And I think that you are right, Aaron, that we have to go counterculture, and there needs to be a moment. I mean, like there has been for the what is a woman moment and some of these things where somebody just stands up and says, you know, the emperor has no clothes. I mean, for those who are familiar, you know, with that story, everybody was buying into the delusion that the king bought into, that somehow these magnificent clothes by these weavers who were totally just snookering him were invisible. And only smart people could actually see the clothes. So everybody was pretending to be smart. And it wasn't until the king, who was fully just, you know, in his undies, goes out in a parade going, look at my clothes. And a little kid stands up and is like, hey, you have no clothes on. And then everybody's like, oh, okay, we've been had. I mean, we need that kind of a clarifying moment in a big way in this country, don't we?
Indeed, yeah. I mean, and I think we're getting close to it. I mean, we've got allies that, you know, 5 years ago on this very issue, you would have said, wow, really them? But a person like Elon Musk, the only reason why he is where he is right now in terms of relevance to right-wing politics in America is because he'll flat out tell you, the woke mind virus killed my son. It killed his son. Now, metaphorically speaking, I'm pretty sure he's talking about, because I believe it was one of his children was just embroiled in this trans madness thanks to this child's mother. But that's why he is on, quote unquote, our side right now. I mean, he's more liberal than you and I. Certainly he's more liberal than you and I would like to be. But we're fast approaching that moment. And like I said, we're making some gains elsewhere. The Ladies Professional Golf Association this week, they announced, hey, no more dudes competing against women in our competitions. There are some good things that are happening. But ultimately, when this argument is over, is when the groundswell of people across the board just stand up and say, nope, not happening on my watch.
Yeah, we need Christians to be the clarion moral voice in society, because if we won't stand up and speak the truth, then who else will? I mean, and God always leaves a remnant, and there's much more than a remnant in this nation currently. And I'm very encouraged by the direction, at least of this election, that voters were willing to stand up and say no to the utter nonsense of the left, but that's from the privacy of the voting booth. We need people to stand up and be recognized, and to say, and especially pastors, to say, you know, here we stand, we can do no other, like Martin Luther in his time. I mean, there have been moments throughout world history where Christians have stood up and stood firmly for the truth, even at great risk to themselves, their reputation, even their families, because they stood firmly on the truth of God. We need pastors who are willing to do that. And that's why I'm really grateful for what you guys do over at The Blaze every day as well, and especially on Steve's show. It's one of the very few that I don't miss as often as I can, Aaron. So, you know, what encourages you to stand up for truth in the midst of a lost and dying culture that's really going insane?
Well, I think it's this is not some sort of Gnostic special knowledge, but I think I've been fortunate to understand what true love is. We often think of love as this really hippy-dippy feeling, fuzzy good feeling, but it's not always that. Love is a motivation. You love somebody, you are motivated to do what's best for them. When my son, if he runs out of the driveway, and this has happened, by the way, when he runs down the driveway and across the street when I'm not looking, do I look at him and I say, oh, buddy, come back here. It's okay. No, I yell at him, Ben, you get back here right now. That's not really fuzzy. That's not really feeling good. But I love
it. But it's love. Yes. Love is an action. So well said. And we have to be yanking our culture back from the brink of despair. Wow, what a great message to end this segment on. We'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. So let's turn to the subject of President Trump's nominees. And so, of course, there is the overall controversy about recess appointments. And you all know my take on that, which is that Trump should absolutely use the process available to him within the lines and the margins of the law and the Constitution and get his work done and get his cabinet filled and, you know, let's go. But right now, the controversy, of course, is surrounding Pete Hegseth, who, according to a report from The Hill last night, speaking to senators who went on the record as a U.S. senator, but didn't, some of them didn't want to disclose exactly who they were because I think they didn't want to incur the wrath of people who are pro-Hegseth. They are saying that he's down by 7 or 8 votes in the Senate. So it's just a matter of time before he will withdraw. But just moments ago, Pete posted, "Thank you, Mr. President. Like you, we will never back down," and posted a screenshot of a Truth Social post from President Trump that says this: "Pete Hegseth is doing very well. His support is strong and deep, much more so than the fake news would have you believe. He was a great student, Princeton/Harvard educated, with a military state of mind. He will be a fantastic high-energy Secretary of Defense. One who leads with charisma and skill. Pete is a winner, and there is nothing that can be done to change that." Meanwhile, Bill Malusion from Fox News also posted and said, "Florida Governor Ron DeSantis will attend the Army-Navy football game with President-elect Trump next Saturday, per source familiar with DeSantis's schedule." And that at least has been confirmed here by us, by me at AFR, from DeSantis's schedule as well. And there is there's kind of this theory going on that DeSantis is just waiting in the wings here until inevitably Pete Hegseth will withdraw, and then DeSantis will be the next Secretary of Defense nominee. So joining us now to discuss is our good friend John Cardillo, who is a GOP strategist, former NYPD. And John, drama on the Hill. What do you make of it?
Yeah, a lot of drama on the Hill. And Mark Halperin, the journalist who's certainly no conservative, right? I think he was pretty critical of the Trump administration in the past. He put out a really long, like a three or four paragraph post on X this morning, contradicting the reports that there are 7 no's in the Senate. Halperin ends his, and I'll text you his post, Jenna. He ends it by saying, you know, to summarize, Hegseth really didn't have all that bad of a week because not one senator said no on the record. And Halperin sums it up essentially by saying that he feels he'll be confirmed, that there's work to do, but he thinks they're going to fight and they're going to push him through. It's odd, right? I mean, you would think both of them would go to the Army and Navy game, Hegseth and DeSantis. Hegseth served in the Army. Ron served in the Navy. And so it is optically odd that Hegseth isn't going along with them, unless he is, and that's just not being reported.
Yeah. Yeah. It is kind of a bizarre moment here. But, you know, you and I being fortunately or unfortunately pretty familiar with Trump world, you know, my take on this is that, you know, Trump is all in until the moment that he's not. And, you know, and even posting the last line of this saying, you know, Pete is a winner and there's nothing that can be done to change that, you know, kind of to me, that's sort of Trumpian for, you know, he's still a winner, even if he ultimately doesn't get the votes. And you do have. I mean, just your thoughts on that.
No, I think you're spot on. You translate Trump to English pretty well. And it's, hey, Pete, you're a great guy. You were around him as his attorney. I mean, you know him better than many people. But so I agree with you on that. And I do agree with the intent of a statement like that is, hey, buddy, you're a winner no matter what, even if I don't pick you. I really wish Donald Trump would have learned something from 2016 about both personnel, letting the left win every time they throw a tantrum, even though the right. But really, I really hope this time around, in that this Hegseth situation triggers something in Trump where he understands the real power of the presidency. You know, somebody very high profile that all of your listeners would know said to me one day about Trump, they said, Trump is the only, and it made a lot of sense, Jenna, they said, Trump is the only president in history who every day his White House counsel and other advisors tell him what he can't do. They had been around multiple administrations, and they said, every other president says, I want to do this, and his staff says, okay, we're going to work overtime to find out how to make that legal and constitutional and get it done. in Trump's case, guys like Pat Cipollone, and I think it became pretty well documented, they were just no men. You can't do that. Mm-hmm. You can't do that. You have no power to do that. But he really did. I wish he would just get Chuck Schumer on the phone and John Thune on the phone and say, guys, I'm a one-term president. I'm going scorched earth. I'm walking in the door lame duck. You start keep this nonsense up with my nominations, and I'm not going to sign any bill that sends a dollar to your state. And I will veto everything because I don't care because I don't have to run again. So let's stop finally playing games after 8 years. And that would go a really long way. But for some reason, he won't do those things. And George Bush did that, and Barack Obama did that, and every other president, you know, played hardball and used the tremendous leverage, the power of the presidency has. Trump still doesn't seem to get that he has that power.
Yeah, and that's something that hopefully once he actually takes office, we'll see a little more of that. But you're absolutely right. I mean, I was in the room at some of those moments where people like Pat Cipollone and others would just, you know, flat out say, you know, no, you can't, you know, which became a really frustrating thing for President Trump because, right. You know, you're right that his aides typically would say, you know, okay, we'll figure out how to get it done, and maybe not exactly in the way, you know, that he was initially asking for it, because obviously that's why you have people like White House counsel, you know, to tell you kind of, you know, how you can get certain things done or, you know, accomplished within the margins of the law and the Constitution. That's the point, right? But I keep saying he was one of the most underserved presidents because of that. And here we are with even somebody like a Joni Ernst, who maybe is just kind of being set up as sort of the face of the objection to Pete Hegseth campaign, if maybe there's a little bit of buyer's remorse here for the nomination. I mean, you know, I've seen weirder things in politics and especially Trump world, and I know you have too, than, you know, Trump being forwardly supportive, meanwhile, you know, telling the Republican senators, hey, you know, let's make this to where he withdraws because I really want to put in somebody else, or I don't have as much confidence in Pete anymore because of the allegations, whatever the reason. Because if Trump were truly wanting Pete, wouldn't he be calling all of these senators, and wouldn't he be wielding that kind of power, and wouldn't he spend the political capital, because he basically has it in spades right now?
Yeah, he really does. And he's already lost two nominees, right? I mean, he lost Gates and then Chad Cronister. And Chad Cronister withdrew because of the critiques around arresting the pastor during COVID when DeSantis even realized the initial EO executive order was a bit overbroad, and they quickly amended it to exempt religious services. Well, Chad Cronister went on with that prosecution anyway, and apparently his sheriff's office is very woke. You know, being former law enforcement, living here in Florida, I know a lot of law enforcement guys and girls in the state, men and women, and they told me he's actually a very woke sheriff as well. He promised her that he was a huge fan and still is of DEI initiatives in that sheriff's office. So I think Trump found out quite a bit. And even though Cronister put out a statement that he stepped down yesterday or the day before, was on Fox Business when I was watching it, it was a graphic where Trump said he didn't step down, I removed him. I'll paraphrase, when I found out all the bad stuff I didn't know about. So now it looks like that he picked three unconfirmable nominees. Doesn't look very good for Trump. I personally think he needs to fight till the end for Hegseth. I think he needs to go all in, because losing a third just doesn't look good. And then they're going to have his left-wing, you know, labor secretary push through. It's optically just not good.
Right, because even if it's a valid reason, or say that, you know, Trump has simply changed his mind, you know, for whatever reason, which he has the prerogative to do, because all of these people are nominated and then eventually serve at the pleasure of the president. And we've seen how, you know, he's just unilaterally dismissed other of his appointees in his previous term, and the president has the power to do that. It's still, of course, by the leftists in the mainstream media, will be manipulated into a negative. I mean, that's all that they did the first term by saying, you know, look at how many chiefs of staff he's had. And it's like, yeah, that's no different than other presidents, but they're trying purposefully to pretend that the rules don't apply to Trump, and how the White House just generally operates doesn't apply to Trump. So you know, I am... to your point, I agree with you that I am a little bit surprised that he's not going more full bore on Pete Hegseth. I mean, this post that came out just moments ago, I've been saying for the last, about 48 hours, like, wow, we haven't heard anything from Trump pushing for Pete. And this was kind of middle of the road for Trump. I mean, it was something, but it wasn't, going all in, and it's not, making calls to senators. Maybe he plans to do that today. But what does he do optically if, let's say, he has changed his mind and he does prefer somebody like a DeSantis? And we can talk about whether, the wisdom in that as well for DeSantis. Let's get to that in a second. But, first, optically, how could that happen?
Well, optically, the message he's sending is that he's considering DeSantis far more than he's considering Pete Hegseth by going to the Army-Navy game with DeSantis, right? I mean, that's symbolic. You've got the president and who is going to optically appear to be a real contender for Secretary of Defense sitting at the West Point Annapolis game. And so the other thing that I think bodes poorly for Hegseth, again, you and I understand in the symbolism of Trump world, symbolism is that you're not really seeing Hegseth in and out of Mar-a-Lago. He's not attached to Trump's hip like the rest. Mm-hmm. So, you get the leaks. Rubio's there and this one is there. And, Kelly Loeffler was down there, and then she gets appointed to run the Small Business Administration the other day. So you're not seeing those leaks and the paparazzi photos of Hegseth going in and out of Mar-a-Lago, which is very telling to me. So there's a little bit of physical distance between the two as well. And so optically, I agree with you, Jenna. It sure does look like Trump is figuring out how to give Hegseth a soft landing and go in a different direction.
Yeah. So, I mean, this remains to be seen. But let's talk about that eventuality. If, however it happens, Hegseth withdraws and then there's an opening and Governor Ron DeSantis here in Florida is offered the SecDef position. It is the most powerful position in the cabinet. This would set him up, I think, well for a 2028 run. But there are obvious risks involved of just being around Trump world and being in a position, unlike governor, where he can operate independently, that he would now serve at the pleasure of Donald Trump. And they're, they are friends now, but could kind of change in a nanosecond. So, is this a good idea for Governor DeSantis?
Look, I don't think so. So, I know the governor. I'm friendly with the governor. I've been very supportive of the governor. But I haven't spoken to him or anyone on his team about this issue. My personal feeling, I don't want to lose him as governor of Florida because he's phenomenal. It's the most amazing state in which to live. But I think there's another incredibly perilous risk for Ron DeSantis, and that's Susie Wiles, Trump's chief of staff, because she hates Ron DeSantis with a passion after being fired from his administration back in 2018, 2019. And the woman has an unhealthy blood vendetta against the guy. So if I'm DeSantis, I'm going to leave the governorship of what's really become the most powerful state in the nation in many respects. I mean, down here, this, Jenna. I live in South Florida in Fort Lauderdale. I was in Miami for 11 years prior. Every major bank is down here building massive skyscrapers. The media is down here. Half of the Fox News hosts now live down here. Mm-hmm. And so why give that up to be under the thumb of Trump and Susie Wiles, who can, like you say, in a nanosecond decide, this isn't working out. And then where does that lead DeSantis? But he stays as governor for two more years. Maybe he winds up SecDef in the second half of Trump's term. Maybe he runs for the Senate seat that's going to be coming up in the 2028 election. He has so many options. I just don't see, as a career move, why he would want to do that, why he'd want to leave Florida and take SecDef.
Yeah, I honestly agree with you on that. And of course, I'm biased because I live in the state of Florida. I'd love to see Governor DeSantis stay as my governor for the next year, set this state up really well to continue in the free state of Florida. But even just talking about DeSantis's political career, the only rationale that I can contemplate on why it might be a good move for him is because you have J.D. Vance, who is the heir apparent to MAGA world, and DeSantis will have to somehow ingratiate himself to assuming that MAGA Inc. and Trump is going to persist as leading the Republican Party through the next term, which, you know, unless something totally crazy happens, which is possible, that is the most likely outcome. And so then there would be that war between DeSantis and Vance where, you know, he may be seen as part of MAGA world and even more powerful than Vance, just with what he gets done as SecDef. So that may be his contemplation. I don't know, but that's the only thing that I can see. But I think there is a really big danger in taking that position for exactly the reasons that you articulated, John. So we're already out of time. We can talk about this a lot more, but you can always reach me and my team, Jenna, at AFR.net. Have a great weekend.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.